Chapter 9 Becoming 40 3 days later, Hoskins stopped by to see Miss Fellows and said,
It's all been worked out. My wife has no further problem about letting Jerry come here to play with Timmy, and Ned Cassaday has drafted a liability agreement that he thinks will stand legal muster.
Liability? Liability for what, Dr. Hoskins?
Why, any sort of injury that might be inflicted.
By Timmy on Jerry, you mean?
Yes,
Hoskins said, in that sheepish voice of his once again. Miss Fellows instantly began to bristle. Tell me, do you seriously think there's any chance of that happening?
Does your wife? If we were really worried about that, we wouldn't be volunteering Jerry to be Timmy's playmate. My wife had her doubts at first, as you know, but it didn't take long for Timmy to win her over. Still, there's always the chance, when you bring two small boys together who don't know each other, that one of them will take a swing at the other, Miss Fellows. I surely don't have to remind you of that.
Of course. But parents don't usually insist on liability agreements before they'll allow their child to play with other children.
Hoskins laughed. You don't understand. It's the company that insists on the liability agreement, not us. Annette and I are the ones who are guaranteeing to the company that we won't take any legal action against Stasis Technologies Limited in case something happens. It's a waiver of liability, Miss Fellows.
Oh,
she said in a very small voice.
I see. When will you be bringing Jerry here, then?
Tomorrow morning. How would that be?
41.
Miss Fellows waited until breakfast time to tell him. She hadn't wanted to say anything the night before, thinking that the excitement of anticipation might unsettle Timmy's sleep, making him edgy and unpredictable when Jerry arrived.
You'll be getting a friend today, Timmy. A friend? Another little boy to play with you. A little boy just like me? Just like you, yes.
In every way that really mattered, Miss Fellows told herself fiercely.
His name is Jerry. He's Dr. Hoskins' son.
Son?
He gave her a puzzled look.
Dr. Hoskins is his father,
she said, as though that would help.
Father?
Father? Son? She held her hand high in the air, then lower down. The father is the big man, the son is the little boy.
He still looked baffled. There were so many basic assumptions of life, so many things that everyone took for granted that were alien to him. It was because he had spent all this time in the isolation of the stasis bubble. But certainly he knew what parents were. Or had he forgotten even that? Not for the first time, Miss Fellows found herself detesting Gerald Hoskins and everyone else connected with Stasis Technologies Limited for having ripped this little boy out of his own proper time and place. She could almost agree with the Bruce Mannheim crowd that a very sophisticated kind of child abuse had taken place here. Rummaging in Timmy's pile of storybooks, Miss Fellows found one of his favorites, a retelling of the story of William Tell. What meaning the story itself had for him was something she couldn't even begin to guess. But the book was boldly and vividly illustrated, and he pored over it again and again, lightly rubbing his fingers over the bright pictures. She opened it now to the 2-page spread showing William Tell shooting the apple off his son's head with a bolt from his crossbow, and indicated first the archer in his medieval costume, then his son.
Father, son, father, son.
Timmy nodded gravely. What, she wondered, was he thinking? That Dr. Hoskins was really a handsome man with long blonde hair, who wore strange clothing and carried a curious machine under his arm? Or that someone was going to come here to shoot apples off his head? Perhaps it had been an error to muddle the moment with abstract concepts like father and son. Well, all that was really important was that Timmy would have a friend soon.
He'll be coming after we've finished breakfast,
Miss Fellows told him. He's a very nice boy. She profoundly hoped that he was.
And you'll show him what a nice boy you are, too, won't you? Nice boy. Yes.
You'll be his friend. He'll be your friend.
Friend. Nice boy.
His eyes were gleaming. But did he understand? Did he understand any of this at all? She felt all sorts of unexpected misgivings as the time of Jerry Hoskins' arrival drew near. She saw all sorts of problems that she had not considered before. Stop it, she told herself. You've wanted this for Timmy for months, and now it's happening. There's nothing to worry about. Nothing.
Miss Fellows?
Hoskins' voice on the intercom.
Here they are, she said to Timmy. Jerry's coming.
To her surprise, Timmy went scuttling into his playroom and closed the door part way. He peered out uneasily. Not a good sign, she thought.
Timmy,
she began. And then the whole Hoskins family was at the threshold of the stasis bubble. Hoskins said,
This is my boy, Jerry. Say hello to Miss Fellows, Jerry.
She saw a round-faced, large-eyed child with pale cheeks and loose, unruly brown hair clutching at Annette Hoskins' skirt. He looked very much like his father, a 5-year-old version of Gerald Hoskins, yes.
Say hello,
Hoskins said to the boy, a little ominously this time.
Hello.
It was barely audible. Jerry receded a bit farther into the folds of the maternal skirt. Miss Fellows gave him her warmest, most inviting smile.
Hello, Jerry. Would you like to come in?
This is where Timmy lives. Timmy's going to be your friend. Jerry stared. He looked as though he would much rather bolt and run.
Lift him over the threshold, Hoskins said to his wife, not very patiently.
She gathered the boy into her arms. It was a distinct effort. Jerry was big for his age and stepped over the threshold. Jerry squirmed visibly as the threshold sensations of stasis passed through him.
He isn't happy, Gerald,
Mrs. Hoskins said. I can see that. It'll take a little time for him to feel at ease. Put him down. Annette Hoskins' eyes searched the room. The muscles in her arms tensed visibly. However much she might have been won over by Timmy on her earlier visit, she seemed more than a little apprehensive now. Her precious little child turned loose in the cage of this ape boy.
Put him down, Annette,
she nodded. The boy backed up against her, staring worriedly at the pair of eyes which were staring back at him from the next room.
Come out here, Timmy,
Miss Fellows said.
This is your new friend, Jerry. Jerry wants very much to meet you. Don't be afraid.
Slowly, Timmy stepped into the room. Jerry squirmed. Hoskins bent to disengage Jerry's fingers from his mother's skirt. In a stage whisper, he said,
Step back, Annette. For God's sake, give the children a chance.
The youngsters faced one another, standing virtually nose to nose. Although Jerry was almost certainly some months younger than Timmy, nevertheless, he was an inch taller. And in the presence of Jerry's straightness and his high-held, well-proportioned head, Timmy's grotesqueries of appearance were suddenly almost as pronounced in Miss Fellows' eyes as they had been in the earliest days. Miss Fellows' lips quivered. There was a long, silent, awkward moment of mutual staring. It was the little Neanderthal who spoke first, finally, in childish treble.
My name is Timmy.
And he thrust his face suddenly forward as though to inspect the other's features more closely. Startled, Jerry responded with a vigorous shove that sent Timmy tumbling. Both began crying loudly, and Mrs. Hoskins snatched up her child, while Miss Fellows, flushed with repressed anger, lifted Timmy quickly and comforted him. The little animal, she thought vehemently, the vicious little beast. But she knew that she was being much too harsh. Timmy had startled Jerry. Jerry had defended himself in the only way he knew. Nothing out of the ordinary had taken place. Something like this was exactly what they should have expected at the outset, Miss Fellows told herself.
Well? Hoskins said.
Well? Annette Hoskins said, I knew this wasn't a good idea. They just instinctively don't like each other. It isn't instinctive, Miss Fellows said firmly.
No, Hoskins said. It's not instinctive at all. any more than when any two children dislike each other on first sight. Put Jerry down and let him get used to the situation.
What if that cave boy hits Jerry back?
It won't be at all amazing if he does, said Hoskin. But he can take care of himself, and if he can't, it's time he started learning how. We just have to let him get accustomed to this by himself. Annette Hoskins still looked uncertain. In fact, her husband went on, I think the best thing is for you and me to leave. If there are any problems, Miss Fellows will know how to handle them. And after an hour or so, she can bring Jerry to my office, and I'll have him taken home.
42. It was a long hour. Timmy retreated to the far end of the room and glowered malevolently at Jerry as though trying to eradicate him from the universe by the intensity of his glare alone. Evidently, he had decided not to take refuge in the back room, as he often did when he felt troubled, perhaps thinking that it was unwise to withdraw and thereby concede the front section of his domain to the enemy by default. As for Jerry, he huddled miserably at the opposite end of the room, crying for his mother. He looked so unhappy that Miss Fellows, though aware that she risked upsetting Timmy even further, went to him and tried to reassure him that his mother was nearby, that he hadn't been abandoned at all, that he'd be seeing her again in just a short while.
"Want her now?" Jerry said.
"You probably think you've been left here to live in this room forever, don't you, child? Just you and Timmy, locked up in this little dollhouse with each other, and you hate the idea. Of course you do, just as Timmy must."
"Home," Jerry said. "Now!"
"You'll be going home soon, Jerry," she told the boy. "This is only a little visit." He struck out at her with his clenched fists.
"No,"
Miss Fellows said, catching him deftly by his belt and holding him at arm's length while he flailed unsuccessfully at her.
"No, Jerry, no, don't hit."
"How would you like a lollipop, Jerry?"
"No, no, no,"
Miss Fellows laughed. "I think you would, though. You stay right where you are, and I'll get one for you." She unlocked the hidden lollipop cache. Timmy had already proved he couldn't be trusted to keep away from the supply she kept on hand, and pulled out a huge, spherical green one, almost too big to fit in the boy's mouth. Jerry's eyes went wide, and he stopped wailing instantly.
"I thought so,"
Miss Fellows said with a grin. She handed the lollipop to him, and he stuck it into his mouth with no difficulty at all. From behind her, Timmy made a low, growling sound.
"Yes, I know you want one, too. I haven't forgotten about you, Timmy."
She pulled a second one out, orange this time, and held it out toward him. Timmy grabbed at it with the ferocity of a caged animal, pulling it from her hand. Miss Fellows gave him a troubled look. She hadn't expected this visit to go serenely, but this was disturbing, these signs of reversion to savagery in Timmy.
Savagery?
No, she thought. That was too harsh an interpretation of Timmy's behavior. It had been Jerry who struck the first blow, Miss Fellows reminded herself. Timmy had come over and introduced himself to Jerry in a polite, civilized way, after all, and Jerry had pushed him. Quite probably, Timmy reasoned that savage growls and snarls were the only sensible response to that sort of behavior. The children glared at each other now over their lollipops across the whole width of the room. The first hour wasn't going to be a lot of fun for anyone, Miss Fellows realized. But this sort of thing was nothing new to her, and not all that intimidating. She had presided over many a pitched battle between angered children, and had seen many a truce come into being eventually, and then friendships. Patience was the answer. In dealing with children, it almost always was. Problems like this had a way of solving themselves, given time.
"What about blocks?"
she asked them.
"Timmy, would you like to play with your blocks?"
Timmy gave her a dark, sullen look. More or less an acquiescent one, she decided, though she wasn't altogether confident she was right about that.
"Good,"
she said. She went into the other room and brought the blocks out. State-of-the-art stuff, smoothly machined cubes that clicked together elegantly, had made a soft, chiming sound when you brought the similarly colored faces into contact. Miss Fellows laid them out in the middle of the floor.
"And is it all right if Jerry plays with your blocks too, Timmy?"
Timmy made a grumbling sound.
It is all right, she said. Good boy. I knew you wouldn't mind. Come on over here, Jerry. Timmy's going to let you play with his blocks.
Hesitantly, Jerry approached. Timmy was down on the floor already, picking through the blocks for the ones he considered his favorites. Jerry watched in a gingerly way from a comfortable distance. Miss Fellows came up behind him and gently but forcefully nudged him downward toward the blocks.
Play with the blocks, Jerry. Go ahead. It's all right. Timmy doesn't mind.
He looked back and up at her, very doubtfully. Then he cautiously selected a block. Timmy made a louder, grumbling noise, but stayed where he was when Miss Fellows shot him a swift, warning look. Jerry took another block. Another. Timmy snatched up two of them and moved them around in back of himself. Jerry took a third block. In hardly any time at all, the pile of blocks had been divided roughly in half, and Timmy was playing with one group of them on one side of the room, and Jerry was studiously playing with the others at the opposite end, close to the door. The two children ignored each other as thoroughly as though they had been on two different planets. There was no contact at all between them, not even a furtive glance. But at least they were playing with the same set of blocks, Miss Fellows thought. It was a start. She dropped back out of their way and let them play. From time to time, she looked over at them to see whether either of them had begun to think of crossing the invisible wall that they had drawn across the middle of the room. But no, they were still lost in their individual spheres of play. They were working so hard at paying no attention to each other that it must have been tiring for them. Timmy had matched all his blocks and had arranged them in a ragged square with its ends open at two corners. Jerry had put his blocks together in a much more intricate way, forming them into a perfect pyramid after making some minor trial-and-error adjustments. Miss Fellows found herself a little disheartened by the greater complexity of Jerry's arrangement of the blocks. Another example of the superiority of the Homo sapiens sapiens mind over that of Homo sapiens neanderthalensis? Maybe so. But it was just as plausible to think that Jerry had a set of blocks like these at home, and that his father, the scientist, the physicist, had taught him all about piling them up in a neat little pyramid like that. Poor, fatherless Timmy had had no such advantage. Miss Fellows had made no attempt to give Timmy instruction in the art of piling up blocks. That had never occurred to her at all. She had been pleased enough that Timmy had been able to figure out how to play with the blocks on his own, almost as if by instinct. Now, feeling abashed by Timmy's relative lack of intellectual prowess, she wanted to think that Dr. Hoskins must have devoted great effort to expanding Jerry's mastery of block pile construction. She certainly hoped he had. "Would you boys like some milk?" Miss Fellows asked as the hour was coming to its end. They did, but they were no more social than before when she served it out. Each retreated to his corner of the room to drink it. Miss Fellows noted with displeasure how much more dexterous Jerry was in handling his glass than Timmy. "Stop that," she ordered herself sternly. "Jerry's had all sorts of opportunities to learn things that Timmy never had. He didn't just drop into this world at age 4 without knowing how to do anything that modern people do." Even so, she couldn't quite succeed in fighting off a mood of mild dejection when she took Jerry back to Hoskins' office at the end of the first hour.
"Well, how did it go?" Hoskins asked.
"We made a beginning," Miss Fellows said. "Only a beginning, but you have to start somewhere."
"No more hitting?"
"No."
She told him about the blocks, leaving out any description of Jerry's apparent superiority as an architect.
"They tolerated each other. That's the best way I can put it. Timmy stayed in one zone and Jerry in the other. It's going to take some time for them to warm up to one another."
"Yes, I'm sure that's true," Hoskins said. He sounded utterly indifferent, almost impatient to have her leave. She noted that he hadn't said a word to his own son since the boy had entered the office. There were papers strewn all over Hoskins' desk, printouts, strips of visual tape, a stack of data wheels.
"A new experiment?" Miss Fellows ventured.
"Yes, as a matter of fact.
or rather, a breakthrough of sorts in an older one. We're closing in on short-range scooping. We're on the verge of attaining intertemporal detection at extremely close range. Narrowing down the limits of our reach. We're well within the 10,000-year envelope now, and the way it looks, we can achieve a quantitative improvement of several magnitudes on our next pass through. Miss Fellows, her mind full of Timmy and Jerry, Jerry and Timmy, looked at him blankly. Hoskins went blithely on. By which I mean we anticipate attaining the ability to reach back in time within 1,000 years, or even less, Miss Fellows. And there's more. We're stepping up our mass limitations, too. The old 40-kilogram limit is about to become a thing of the past. We think 80, even 100 kilograms, is well within possibility now.
I'm very happy for you, Dr. Hoskins. She said it with no warmth whatsoever in her voice, but Hoskins didn't appear to observe that.
Yes, thank you, Miss Fellows. Hoskins glanced at his son, as though noticing him for the first time, and gathered him in against him with a casual sweep of his arm. Well, we'll have to bring Jerry back here in another couple of days, and see if things work out a little better between them the next time, eh, Miss Fellows?
Yes, yes, of course.
She hesitated. Is there anything else? Hoskins asked. Yes, there was. She wanted to tell him how grateful to him she was for having allowed Jerry to come to visit Timmy at all, even though it hadn't gone particularly well. She knew that the initial tensions would ebb, that fears and uncertainties would vanish over the course of time, that the boys would eventually become friends. Timmy's willingness to share the blocks, however tepid it had been, told her that much, and a friend was what Timmy needed more than anything. As time went along, Jerry's presence would cause wonderful changes in Timmy, opening him up, allowing him to reach out to someone who was his peer, enabling him to become the boy he was meant to be. Yes, at last, Timmy would be able to become Timmy. He couldn't do that while living alone, no matter how lovingly she cared for him. Miss Fellows was grateful indeed to Hoskins, almost maudlinly grateful for having brought Jerry to him. But she couldn't bring herself to tell Hoskins that. She searched for ways to thank him, but his very formality, his remoteness, his preoccupation with the printouts and data wheels of this new experiment of his, served as a chilly rebuff. Perhaps he still remembered that time when they had had lunch together, when she had spoken of him as though he were Timmy's father, in every sense but the biological, and said that he was being cruel by denying Timmy a companion, that he owed it to the boy. So he had brought in his own real son. Perhaps bringing Jerry here had been an attempt, after all, to prove himself both a kind father to Timmy, and also not his father at all, both at the same time, and with all manner of buried resentments involved. So all she could say was, "I'm very pleased you've allowed your boy to come here. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Hoskins." And all he could say was, "That's all right. Don't mention it, Miss Fellow." 43. It became a settled routine. Jerry returned 3 days later, and 4 days after that. The second visit lasted as long as the first, the third one was extended to 2 hours, and that remained the rule thereafter. There was no repetition of the staring and shoving of the first visit. The two boys eyed each other a little fretfully when Jerry, without either of his parents, was brought through the stasis barrier the second time. But Miss Fellows quickly said, "Here's your friend Jerry again, Timmy." And Timmy nodded in acknowledgment of Jerry's presence without any show of hostility. He was starting to accept Jerry as a fact of life in the bubble, like the visits of the anthropologists or the tests administered by Dr. Jacobs.
"Say hello, Timmy."
"Hello."
"Jerry?"
"Hello, Timmy."
"Now you say, 'Hello, Jerry,' why don't you, Timmy?" A pause.
"Hello, Jerry."
"Hello, Timmy."
"Hello, Jerry."
"Hello, Timmy."
"Hello, Jerry."
They wouldn't stop. It had become a game. They were both laughing. Miss Fellows felt relief flooding her spirit. Children who could be silly together were children who weren't likely to start punching each other the moment she turned her back on them. Children who made each other laugh weren't going to hate each other.
Hello, Timmy. Hello, Jerry. Hello.
And another thing. Jerry didn't seem to be having any trouble understanding what Timmy was saying. Not that Hello, Jerry was a particularly complicated series of sounds, but plenty of adult visitors to the dollhouse had failed completely to comprehend even a syllable of Timmy's speech. Jerry didn't have an adult's preconceptions about enunciation and pronunciation, though. Timmy's thick-tongued manner of speaking apparently held no mysteries for him.
"Would you like to play with the blocks again?"
Miss Fellows asked. Enthusiastic nods. She brought them in front of the other room and dumped them on the floor. Quickly, the boys divided them once again into approximately equal heaps. Each went swiftly to work on his own heap. But this time, there was no retreating to opposite ends of the room. They worked side by side, in silence, neither one paying any great attention to what the other was doing, but having no problem with the other one's proximity. Good. Good. What wasn't so good was the fact that the division of the blocks hadn't been quite as equal as Miss Fellows had thought at first glance. Jerry had appropriated considerably more than half of them, close to two-thirds, as a matter of fact. He was rapidly arranging them into the pyramid shape again, carrying out the construction more easily now that he had a greater supply of building material. As for Timmy, he was working on some kind of X-shaped pattern, but he didn't quite have enough blocks to make his design turn out properly. Miss Fellows saw him glance thoughtfully at Jerry's pile of blocks, and got herself ready to intervene in case a squabble began. But Timmy didn't actually reach across to help himself to any of Jerry's blocks. He contented himself simply with staring at them. A laudable sign of self-restraint? The politeness of the well-bred child toward his guest? Or was there something more worrisome in Timmy's reluctance to take blocks away from Jerry? One thing that Timmy wasn't was well-bred. Miss Fellows had no illusions about that. She had trained him with all her skill and diligence to be courteous and deferential. But nevertheless, it was folly to believe that Timmy was any model of deportment. What he was the child of a primitive society where manners, as they were understood today, were probably unknown. And after being taken from his own tribe, he had been compelled to live in isolation in the stasis bubble, which had given him no opportunity to develop many of the social traits that ordinary children had picked up by the time they were his age. And ordinary children his age weren't all that polite, either. If Timmy wasn't reaching out to take the blocks from Jerry, his blocks, after all, that he wanted, the reason probably wasn't that he was such a nice little boy, but simply that he was intimidated by Jerry. Afraid to reach out and help himself to the blocks the way any boy might be expected to do. Had that single shove at the first visit so cowed Timmy? Or was it something else? Something deeper, something darker, something lost in the forgotten history of the human race's earliest days? 44. Early one evening after Timmy had gone to his room, the telephone rang, and the switchboard voice said, "Miss Fellows, I have a call for you from Bruce Mannheim." She raised her eyebrow. Mannheim calling her? Nobody called her here, not ever. By her own choice, she lived almost completely cut off from the outside world, lest she be bothered by the media, by curious-minded people of all sorts, by crackpots and fanatics, and by people like Bruce Mannheim. But here he was on the telephone. How had he managed to get through to her behind Hoskins' back? He must be calling with Hoskins' knowledge and permission, she decided.
Yes, Mr. Mannheim? How are you?
Fine, Miss Fellows, just fine.
Dr. Hoskins tells me that Timmy finally has the playmate he needs. So he does. Dr. Hoskins' own son, as a matter of fact.
Yes, I know that. We all think it was perfectly splendid of Dr. Hoskins to do that. And how is everything working out, would you say? Miss Fellows hesitated.
Quite well, actually.
The boys are getting along with each other?
Of course they are. There was the usual little edginess at first. More on Jerry's part than Timmy's, I have to say. Timmy took to Jerry very readily, even though he'd never seen a child his own age of our kind before.
But Jerry, confronted with a Neanderthal, he didn't react so well?
I don't know whether Timmy's being a Neanderthal had anything to do with it, Mr. Mannheim. He was just edgy, that's all. A straight child-child reaction, without any special anthropological undertones, is what I'd call it. Push came to shove. It could have happened between any two. But it's not like that now. They're very peaceful with each other.
Glad to hear it, Mannheim said. And Timmy is thriving?
He's doing very well, yes.
There was a pause.
She hoped the children's advocate wasn't leading up to telling her that he had wangled permission to pay another call on the dollhouse so that he could check up on Timmy's new friendship. Timmy didn't need any more visitors than he already had, and Miss Fellows was wary of having an outsider like Mannheim on hand while Timmy and Jerry were together. Their developing relationship, while it was just as peaceful as she had told Mannheim it was, had a subtext of potential volatility that was all too likely to turn into something troublesome in the presence of a stranger. But Mannheim wasn't planning to visit, it seemed. He said, after a moment, I just want to tell you, Miss Fellows, how pleased we all are that a capable nurse like you is looking after Timmy.
That's very kind of you.
The boy's been put through a very frightening experience, and he's made a wonderful adaptation so far. Much of the credit for that must go to you.
What did he mean, so far?
We'd much rather have preferred it, of course, that Timmy had been left to live out his natural life among his own people, Mannheim continued. But since that option wasn't allowed him, it's good to know that a devoted, dedicated woman like you has been placed in charge of him, that you've been giving him the kind of care you have ever since he came to our era. You've worked wonders. I have no other word for it.
That's very kind of you,
Miss Fellows said again, more lamely than before. She had never cared much for praise, and Mannheim was laying it on pretty thickly.
And Dr. Levian feels the same way that I do.
Ah,
said Miss Fellows.
Yes.
And coolly, stiffly.
That's very good to hear.
I'd like to give you my number, Mannheim said.
Why? I can always reach you through Dr. Hoskins,
Miss Fellows replied. Yes, of course, but a time might come when you'd want to reach me more directly.
Why? What is this all about?
Well, perhaps I feel that you and I are natural allies in this enterprise, Miss Fellows. The one thing we have at heart above all else is Timmy's welfare. However we may feel about child care techniques, about politics, about anything in the world, we both are concerned with Timmy, deeply so. And therefore, if you need to talk to me about Timmy's welfare, if any changes take place in the setup at Stasis Technologies that might have an unfavorable impact on Timmy's existence there...
Ah, you want me to be a spy for you. I'm sure that everything's going to keep on going very smoothly, Mr. Mannheim.
Of course it will, of course. But all the same...
He gave her the number. She wrote it down, not knowing why. Just in case, Miss Fellows told herself.
In case of what?
45.
Is Jerry coming again today, Miss Fellows?
Timmy asked.
Tomorrow.
The boy's disappointment was all too obvious. His round face dissolved into wrinkles, his jutting brow knotted in a frown.
Why not today?
Today isn't Jerry's day, Timmy. Jerry has a place to go today.
What place?
A place,
she said, being deliberately vague. How could she describe kindergarten to him? What would Timmy think, knowing that other children, many of them, came together to play games, to chase each other in laughter around a schoolyard, to daub pieces of paper with gloriously gooey finger paint.
Jerry'll be here tomorrow.
I wish he could come every day.
So do I, Miss Fellows said.
But do I? Really?
46. The problem was not that Timmy had a friend, but that the friend was becoming too confident, too aggressive, as time went along. Jerry had overcome his initial timidity entirely by now, and he was very much the dominant member of the pair. He had been bigger than Timmy to start with, and he seemed to be growing faster now. The height differential was close to 1.5 inches by this time, and Jerry was heavier than Timmy as well, and quicker and stronger, and Miss Fellows had trouble with this aspect of it, quite possibly more intelligent, too. Jerry seemed to figure out new toys much more swiftly than Timmy, and to find interesting things to do with them. And when she gave them paints or crayons or modeling clay to play with, Jerry quickly set to work creating designs and shapes, while Timmy simply made messes. Timmy appeared to have no artistic aptitude at all, not even the minimal skills one would expect from any reasonably intelligent child his age. Of course, she argued, Jerry goes to kindergarten every day. He's learned all about how to use crayons and paints and clay there. But Timmy had had them too, long before Jerry had first come here. He had never managed to master them, but that hadn't troubled Miss Fellows at the time. She hadn't been comparing Timmy with any other children then, and she was making allowances for the blankness of his first few years. Now she remembered what she had read in the books Dr. McIntyre had given her, about the total absence of any known examples of Neanderthal art. No cave paintings, no statuettes, no designs carved on walls. What if they really were inferior? And that was why they died out when we came along. Miss Fellows didn't want to think about that. Yet here was Jerry, swaggering in here now twice a week, as if he owned the place.
"Let's play with the blocks," he would say to Timmy. "Or let's paint. Or let's watch the Whirlow screen."
And Timmy would go along with it, never suggesting some preference of his own, always blandly following Jerry's agenda. Jerry had forced Timmy into a completely secondary role. The only thing that reconciled Miss Fellows to the developing situation was that, despite difficulties, Timmy looked forward with more and more delight to the periodic appearances of his playfellow. "Jerry is all he has," she told herself mournfully. And once, as she watched them, she thought, "Hoskins' two children, one by his wife, and one by Stasis." Whereas she herself, heaven, she thought, putting her fists to her temples and feeling ashamed, "I'm jealous.